League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 723. It's the 1st of March, 2017. Happy St. David's Day. On the podcast today, I have Lawrence Cummins. He's CEO of Nexstar, which is the joint venture Milestone Group, MSG, have with Black Cactus Group. And he talks about their implementation of blockchain technology on their platform. Also on the podcast, market analyst with SpreadX, Connor Campbell, talks about the Trump speech last night at Congress, his first speech to Congress. Also covers Capita Group, that's CPI, and Merlin Entertainment, MERL ticker. They both have results out tomorrow. Plus, full-time investor Wheelie Dealer talks about diversified oil and gas, that's DGOC, and Patisserie Holdings, Cake. I also have today's suggested one for your watch list, which is ITM Power. And the ticker there is ITM. Don't forget, anything you hear in this podcast, it's not intended as investment advice, just information on which to base your research. Okay, ITM was submitted by Kieran. Thanks for that, Kieran. I go through the reasons why Kieran thinks you should add that to your watch list in a bit. Also, as always, on the podcast, top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lawrence Cummins, CEO and Chief Technology Officer of Nexstar. Lawrence, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
That's all right. Now, if anyone's wondering, Nexstar is a joint venture between Black Cactus, which is Lawrence's company there, and Milestone Group, which is MSG ticker. So I saw the mentions of blockchain, Lawrence, in Milestone's last release, and I'm very interested in blockchain tech. And I'm sure a lot of people have heard it, and it's becoming more prevalent. You know, every sort of year we're hearing it's the inflection point for blockchain. So first and foremost, Larry, can you give us a brief and simplified for people, like myself, introduction to blockchain? What's it all about, please?
Well, blockchain is basically a distributed database, a network that allows you to share information in decentralized ways. So basically, think of it as a Excel document or a Google document. Normally, what happens, I send it to you, and you wait for you to download it, make changes to it, and then send it back to me. But in the blockchain, basically, it's decentralized, so everybody has access to it. And no one actually, everyone on the network is an administrator. So we can share this information in real time, make changes, move things around, okay, and then have it authenticated in a real-time environment. So it truly is sharing technology that allows people to work in a real-time environment. If I can take a step back and give you an example,
most people
think of blockchain is the technology behind Bitcoin, or they confuse blockchain and Bitcoin to be one of the same. Well, reality is Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency that is used for people to transact using blockchain. But blockchain can be used for anything outside of the cryptocurrency market. For example, it can be used for the music industry, where I'm an artist and I've created my intellectual property, my song, my book, my movie, whatever I have created, my IP. And today what normally happens is I go and I publish it through a trusted source. That could be a studio, that could be a record label and so on. And I normally lose control of my IP, my intellectual property rights. And it's very hard to manage my payments. With the blockchain, I can publish myself, I can control my own IP, and when someone listens to my music or downloads my music, I know in real time pretty much what's happening and control and manage and own the IP and the revenues that come from it. I'm bypassing all the middlemen.
Yeah, I see, I understand. Okay, I've read a few household names now, and I've read about companies and banks especially are looking into blockchain. But outside of finance, is this a huge move away from its original purpose? And how difficult
Absolutely.
Is it? Yeah, and how difficult is it to apply outside finance?
Outside of finance, it can be used in multiple areas. For example, there's a company in Chicago called Northern Trust Bank, and through IBM and their blockchain technology, they're now using the blockchain for their M&A business, merchant acquisitions, to move documents around. So you can use blockchain for smart contracts, using distributed ledger. You can use it for what we call a sharing economy, where what we're doing peer-to-peer, node-to-node, where I want to share information with anybody in the network. I can use it for crowdfunding. I can use it for governance, for example, for doing elections, polling, taxation, and so on. It can be used for supply chain, for stores to actually manage inventory, the consumers, and so on. It can be used for file storage, for email, for large documents, for any information that needs to be shared in it and is hack-proof. It can be used for predictive marketing. It can be used for intellectual properties. Intellectual properties could be for music, or it could be IP or software, or an aerospace company, or an automotive company that's come up with some new design. It's part of the Internet of Everything. I'll go back and explain what that is in a second. It can be used for identity management, managing people, security, airports, and so on. In the financial industry, it could be used for the AML and KYC, anti-money laundering, and know your customer for credit cards, bank transfers, and so on. In data management, it can be used for land registries. And most importantly, it can be used for stock tracking and selling. For example, you could use the blockchain to do, and by removing the middlemen, you can actually do it for futures, options, commodities, any stock. You can use it. You can actually trade with blockchain against the dollar, the Bitcoin against the dollar, or dollars against the euro using the blockchain. So the blockchain can be used in multiple of different industries and for different reasons.
Okay, so and like I said, you've developed the blockchain for use in your music platform there. So just in respects of Nexstar here and Milestone Group, what are the advantages in doing this, and how is it working there?
Well, we haven't invented the blockchain. We're using the blockchain. We use the technological Ethereum out of Switzerland.
Yeah.
But what we're doing is taking that open source technology, okay, and then applying it for the music industry and for the fintech industry.
I see. Yeah, go on.
Where we're building specific applications to be able to build these platforms out in a decentralized way and remove all the middlemen. And what's most important here, removes all the middlemen. So basically, think of a bank as a trusted source.
Mm-hmm.
In the future, you won't be having banks. You'll be dealing directly between me and yourself. And if I want to send payments to, say, my family in America or in Australia, I don't need to go to a bank anymore. I can actually send it peer-to-peer to them directly without having to go through a bank.
I see.
Therefore, all the middlemen are being removed, and that's the future. And then something called the Internet of Everything, Internet 3.0, okay? And it's the next generation of Internet. And just like we use the Internet today to actually watch movies, to play music, to get news sources, to do our online trading and whatever, the people won't know they're using blockchain. They'll be using it just like they use an email, not understand the technology behind it. But in reality, the blockchain is what's going to change their lives and also reduce their cost of doing transactions.
Yeah, I understand completely. And so just specifically now for Nexstar and MSA, so tell me how this will give you an advantage over sort of traditional ways of doing it.
Well, basically, from Milestone's point of view or Nexstar's point of view, we're very strong in the music publishing industry. So basically, we publish the artist's music. We build a platform out for him where people can download and distribute the music through social media without having to go through any studios or anyone else, where the artist can publish and directly go to the consumer by using Facebook or Twitter or his own platform. They download to their device. We also distribute to iTunes and all the iTunes stores and the Google stores and Spotify and Deezer and all these other music services to 220 countries in the world, okay, where we track that artist's IP and his revenues. Okay, and by doing that, we're bypassing all the major studios and all the middlemen involved in the artist, allowing the artist or the band to have complete control of his music in virtually a real-time environment. We do it for movies, and we do it for books, and we do it for music in the media business. The other side of that, we do it for the fintech industry. Now, we're not doing it from the point of fintech to be able to do trading, which we can. We're doing it to manage the whole document communication and how, for example, let's say I want to do credit card payments. We can use a blockchain to actually do the clearing, the processing, and everything else of a card transaction. Let's say I want to do virtual banking, where, for example, we now live in the cloud. So rather than going to a bank, we create an online virtual bank, and we do all our transactions, pick up payments, but we make them in the blockchain rather than actually going into a high street bank. Okay, there's $400 million that's going to be invested in the next 18 months with all the major banks on research and development of the blockchain and how they're going to be implementing that. This is actually a technology changer. This is disruptive technology that's changing the way we do things today, and it's giving the consumer or the power over their everyday transactions, whether it's music, financial, or even their medical history, or whether it's their taxation. They have control over that.
And can I say, is this blockchain technology now integrated already, or is it about to happen at Nexstar?
It's been used. For example, it's peer-to-peer, node-to-node. So distributed. So basically think of everyone's computer as part of the network. Mm. Okay, and what happens is it's a ledger, and I need 3 or 4 points to verify a transaction in real time. And if it's not correct, it gets rejected. And so where it's been used right now, it is being used today in the music industry, and it's being used today in the financial services industry, and it's being used in the power management distribution industry, okay? And there are governments now are looking at it as how they're going to be using it for taxation, for land registry, for banking, for security. The blockchain is here. We're using it today. Most people are not aware of it.
Okay, excellent. So I imagine blockchain, it's getting more and more attention as time goes on, and you see the adoption of it by sort of bigger, institutions and banks and, businesses. So it's going to be a force in the future, definitely. Very interesting to have you on, Lawrence. Thanks very much for that, and I look forward to speaking to you again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much, Lawrence.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Connor Campbell, Market Analyst at Spreadex. Connor, morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Now, I didn't stay up last night. I've got to say, I went to bed. I didn't catch Trump. I did lose a bit of sleep last night because I ended up watching Billions, Damian Lewis on, but I prefer that to Trump, to be honest. But did you stay up and watch it, or what was the reaction to it, or what are your thoughts at the moment?
I didn't stay up and watch it. That's not necessarily my idea of a fun night in, but I looked at the reaction this morning. Yesterday the markets didn't really move at all. It was all waiting for Trump's appearance in front of Congress last night. There wasn't really any interest for investors trying to second guess what he might say or do. It ended up being, one of his less controversial appearances, really. It was more in line with his speech after he won the election, where he came across as quote-unquote presidential, where, you know, in contrast to the sort of doom and gloom and fire and brimstone speech at his inauguration. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a sort of classic Trump of repeating statements about, you know, fiscal spending and that $1 trillion boost to infrastructure spending and, you know, tax reforms for major companies and how that'll be passed down to the middle classes. But it was the sort of light on the nitty gritty that sort of really needs to be put across now, and that seems sort of beyond Trump's reach, really. He's not very good on detail. The market seemed, you know, relatively happy with what he said, though. I think the expectations were quite high and investors were probably looking for a bit more detail than he actually provided. But overall, if you look at the markets this morning, they're far perkier than they were yesterday. The FTSE's back above 7,300. There is a sort of slight more sense of positivity and renewed optimism that was maybe flagging last week and the week before. Again, though, I don't think enough renewed optimism to significantly push the markets on, perhaps, but enough, you know, to see this morning some slight increases on where we were yesterday.
Yeah, it's almost like they were looking for detail he can't really give, you know.
I think
a couple of people say if he gives too much detail, the markets may sell off because it's been, you know, rallying on hope. And what happens is it's all that old saying, isn't it? You know, buy the rumor, sell the fact. And he didn't give a lot of fact. He just kept the rumor going a little bit and got the hope going, I suppose, a little bit.
That's the issue, that when he starts giving details, it probably isn't going to be as, you know, green grass as he's claimed it's going to be. Yeah. So I think that, you know, there might be an element of putting that off for a while. It's also, you know, fairly early in his tenure, and his big claims, perhaps they aren't ready. The things he's promising are pretty substantial, and there is a chance that they're just not prepared yet. You know, it's been a bit of a tortured process, really, his first month or so in charge.
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem to be a great leadership there, so it isn't surprising necessarily that those details aren't to hand.
Yeah, well, it says to me, though, he isn't such a wild card as people, because when he has these, you know, these very well-known sort of addresses that he has to do, like they say, when he became president and the Congress yesterday, he does tone it down a bit, you know? He's not the Twitter Donald Trump that you see or hear about a lot, and he tends to tone it down. But which is not a bad thing, I suppose. It shows it does sort of bend to public perception a little bit. You know, he's not going to be out and out controversial all the time, which is not a bad thing. Okay, so let's go to the individual companies. What companies are reporting this week, Connor?
I guess the major one left to report this week is perhaps Capita. You know, Capita was the worst performer in the FTSE 100 last year. There's every chance it's going to be booted out of the FTSE 100 when the index has its reshuffle, you know, its first reshuffle of the year this week.
Yeah.
It fell, I think, 56% across 2016, most of that coming in the second half of the year. In September, it issued a really lethal profit warning that wiped out 27% in value in a single session, really,
yeah,
based on post-Brexit trading and issues there. Then in December, it sort of doubled down on that, announced that it was selling off its asset services division, which comprises 8% of the company's revenue. Also trimmed profit guidance again. I think it's now expecting $515 million for the year. I think before that, it had been expecting in the $600 million. So it's really been a truly awful 6 or 7 months for Capita. It leaves it in a position where any slight good news, any kind of silver lining could lead it to some kind of minor recovery. I think it's trading around the mid £5, you know, £5.50. At the start of 2016, I think it was £13-14. You know, it's in a whopping decline.
Yeah.
So at those kinds of levels, and given how negative it's been in September and December respectively, the slightest kind of good news could see it lift up away from its current lows.
Yeah, well, it dipped down to, where do you, I'm looking at the chart here, dipped down to around about 439, you know, at its lowest level, and then it popped.
Yeah, I think that was
almost
decade low when it hit that in December.
Yeah, so it's super oversold there, and it's popped back up above £5, and it seemed to use that as a bit of support. It's dipped below that, about 470 odd. But now it's up at 560, I think it is today, 563. And so you think that £5 level, buying against that, may be a good sign. Because like you say, they've thrown the kitchen sink in there. Every bit of bad news is out now, pretty much, isn't it? So anything they say that's good or positive may see an uplift in the share price. You never know.
Yeah, exactly. I think investors will have their fingers crossed that, like you said, that is all the bad news gone. And if they can, I think they got a new CEO around September. So if he can post or if he can reveal some sort of substantial restructuring plan or comment on the issues they brought up in December, and if there seems to be clear leadership, and even if a turnaround not evident yet, a turnaround in the process, then there could be a recovery in the share price.
Yeah. Okay. And it's interesting to say a new CEO, because if a company is going badly and a CEO comes in, that's their chance, isn't it? Just get all the bad news out and then essentially try and start afresh. Then, all right. What's any other companies reporting this week of any note?
I guess the other big ones for the Merlin Entertainments, mega tourism company, owns places like obviously Alton Towers. Obviously, sadly, a few years ago with the major incident there, and things like Madame Tussauds in London and other, and around the world, and things, and Legoland being, I think, is probably biggest brand globally.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's considering the aforementioned issues at Alton Towers, I think, in 2015, and a pair of pretty gloomy updates in September and November, I think, where it said that wider security concerns, named the terrorist attack in Paris, had suppressed interest in its city centre attractions, and that it had seen no material boost from Stirling's slump, because there had been reports that perhaps that would draw more tourists over to the country, and Merlin would be one of those companies that saw a boost from that. The fact that it's climbed, I think last week it hit £5, which is the first time it's ever climbed above that level in its history. Yeah. The fact that it's at those levels, despite a fairly gloomy couple of statements, is pretty impressive. I think heading into its full year figures, full year profits expected to climb 9.2% to, I think, £273 million. That's a huge improvement on the 0.3% growth it managed in 2015. So despite some underlying issues, macro concerns, etc., Merlin is doing pretty well. I think if it can also comment on its global Legoland expansion, because I think it's opening places in Dubai and perhaps New York, Legoland being its most successful brand, really, it could be in for a decent reaction after its full year figures on Thursday. The issue is, because it is at £5, which is effectively an all-time high, there is room for the slightest bit of negative news to be picked up on investors and call them to question where Merlin is, and perhaps drag it a bit lower. But I think, it is in a decent situation at the moment, especially if, say, those city centre concerns have eased in the first quarter. I think guidance going forwards for the rest of the year is also going to be key for the company.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm looking at the chart here from mid-2015, and it is like one of their roller coaster rides, but it's going in an uphill sort of roller coaster. So it's literally up and down, but the lows are getting higher, So the trend is up, but yet it literally goes way up and down, way. Some big sort of variations in the price. I mean, looking at trough to peak here, so from 370 to up to, 450. So it's like a pound variation in the share price over a couple of months, up and down, up and down. But it is grinding higher. But like I said, it's hit that £5 mark. It'll be interesting to see now where it goes from here. Marvellous. So that's out tomorrow. Merlin. Ticker there is MERL if you're interested. Connor, thanks for that. And speak next week, fella.
Speak next week. Thanks very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is full-time private investor Wheelie Dealer. You all right, fella?
Yeah, good, mate. You?
Yeah, not too bad. What are we doing? Start of the third month, yeah? So happy St. David's Day, by the way.
Oh, blimey, where's the year going?
It's nuts, isn't it? But how's the year gone for you so far, stocks-wise?
Oh, man, it's just been crazy, absolutely crazy. I think it's the best start I've ever had to a year. I think probably my best year ever was about 3 or 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I reckon I'm at the same point after 2 months that I was after 4 months.
Okay.
So I'm just so pleased with how it's going. Especially because, I was banging my head against the wall all last year, where I'd got my hedging completely wrong and I just caused myself loads of grief.
Yeah.
And this year I just seem to, be on the right side of things. And honestly, some of the ones I've had, like Boohoo and Empresaria and TS, Tristel, I've just got so many like that. I've just done so well, and they just keep going up and up and up. It's just marvellous. Loving it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a nice contrast to the start of last year, which apparently the worst performance ever for the S&P for the start of a year. So it's a bit of a change, but it's the Trump effect, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I think, you know, if a lot of his tax cutting and deregulation policies and stuff really, you know, get done and kick off, then, you know, they reckon that America could be growing at like 4-5% GDP growth. It's only doing about, what, 2-2.5 now. Which, you know, obviously if America is booming, it pulls the rest of the world up with it.
Yeah.
I think that's what it's all about. And technically speaking, with all of the market, you know, the US markets have all broken out to new all-time highs. There's a lot of support just below. I mean, I'm sure we're going to get a pullback soon, but there's a lot of support not far down. So, you know, I don't think we're going to fall much, you know, and then start charging back up again. So I think things just look really good.
What I'm wondering about, I've heard a lot about this debt ceiling coming up to, you know, the Trump debt ceiling, and he obviously wants to spend more. And I think, yeah, you know, his ambitious plans will be somewhat, you know, confined or, you know,
that's
limited.
The problem, isn't it? That's where the problem is. I think everything really is predicated on the growth. Mm. If they can project the growth to grow to, you know, 3.5-4%, that then brings in a lot more tax revenue, you know, because you're just generating more growth, even though you've got a lower tax rate. So that's the sort of thinking behind it. But it's whether Trump can persuade the sort of hardline Tea Party Republicans and you know, and whether he can get the Democrats to go along with it. It's going to be a challenging one. I mean, did you see his speech last night?
No, I've got better things to do than watch that nonsense.
I watched it, mate. I stayed up and watched it. It was crazy. So I was up at like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. It was a bit of draining, but it was really weird because, you know, it seems to have gone down reasonably well. I was watching CNN, which are normally really biased towards the Democrat. You know, they call it the Clinton News Network. And yet they were actually generally quite positive about it. And they thought it's the most presidential that Trump has looked. But the thing I thought was interesting was that for loads of the actual speech, the Democrats were just sat down looking grumpy. They weren't happy at all. They weren't clapping, where of course the other half of the Republicans are all clapping and cheering, you know. Yeah. So I'm not sure how much he is going to bridge the divide. I don't know. But then again, he's got dominance in the House and in the Senate and stuff anyway. So perhaps he can get a lot of these things through without a lot of Democrats backing him.
Yeah, do you know what's odd is in this day and age of digital and, you know, where you can basically, you know, watch anything at any time, it's odd that we stay up to like 3 or 4 in the morning and watch stuff when you can watch clips again and, you know, on the next day. But I suppose I did it with the presidential election anyway. But I suppose, you know, once that's a result's gone,
that's That's a big one, isn't it? You know, that's quite it. And of course, this time it was the most exciting presidential election I've ever known in my lifetime. I've never, ever been interested in US politics before. But, you know, Trump has just made it so crazy. It's just weird, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Anyway, listen, we can do nothing.
It's made it interesting.
Yeah, we can do nothing about the macro. In fact, we can do nothing about the micro. But at least we can
try and tag along for the ride.
Yeah. At least we can sort of buy the micro sometimes and hopefully it goes up. What have you been looking at? Have you bought anything recently? What's going on?
Well, the most exciting one for me at the moment is this diversified gas and oil. Have I got that right? Yeah, diversified gas and oil company, DGOC.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? Did you hear about this? Someone said they call it that. They've got it the wrong way around, haven't they? Because normally it's diversified oil and gas, but that would have been dog.
It's so confusing. I was like, I kept getting it wrong, you know.
Yeah, because they wanted to avoid the ticker dog, so diversified dog oil and gas. So they were diversified gas and oil. But it's hard to remember, isn't it, that? So what's the deal with this? And I saw it, and I know that someone said it didn't do well on its first day of trading for some reason, but I've heard a lot of people talk about it now. So what's the deal then? Give us your take on this.
The interesting thing is it IPO'd at 65 pence, yeah? And I've just bought some today at 64. I haven't gone mad. I've gone for about 2% of my portfolio. But what it's about, I mean, the thing that really got me unusually interested, I've been looking for, you know, I'm not really a huge fan of gas and oil tiny stocks, you know. As you and I know, I like to have a sort of fairly easy life and don't trade much and just keep away from it all, really. Mm-hmm. But what I do like and I occasionally buy, well, a sort of, you know, mid-cap size kind of oil stock. And this thing sort of nearly, you know, fills that bill. And the thing that really interested me is they're due to pay a dividend next year of 6% on the IPO price. So, you know, so people buying them now at 64, 65 are going to get that 6% yield, which is just remarkable. You just don't get that on many oil stocks.
Yeah. How much do you know about them then? What are they, I mean, their operations?
Well, Yeah, what it is, they operate in America, so it's like a pretty, okay, you got Trump, but it's quite a low-risk political, you know, country.
Yeah.
And they're in the sort of Appalachian Mountains, which I understand is bits of Pennsylvania and Ohio and things like that. Mm-hmm. And where it gets interesting is that the big oil players are interested in shale gas and shale oil. That's what they're after. Yeah. But what they do is they buy acreage, right? You know, loads and loads of thousands of acres, you know, where they're going to find shale gas to dig out at some point. But under their permitting rules, they have to dig out the conventional oil and gas that's above the shale, you know, in the bedrock formations or whatever you call it. So what they do, they're not interested in that. So what they do is they get DGOC and a few other people like DGOC. To come in and buy those wells off them, and they sell them pretty damn cheap.
Yeah.
And the thing is, then DGOC have got something like 4,500 producing oil wells. So they've got these little nodding donkeys, and they, you know, they're really low volume wells, but they've got lives of about 30 years or so. So the little nodding donkeys plod away for 30 years, just pumping out a little bit of oil. But if you've got 4,500 of darn things, it's a lot of gas and a lot of oil.
Mm.
But where it gets really interesting is that so not only are you getting your 6% dividend, there's also growth potential here. And the growth comes because DGOC paid down all their debt. They got no debt, yeah?
Yeah.
And what that means is they've got a strong balance sheet where they can buy more of these oil fields.
Yeah.
And more of this acreage. And then the other bit of upside that comes is that they can do what they call infill drilling. So if you've got a huge acreage and you've got loads of nodding donkeys, you get gaps, obviously, between the nodding donkeys. And what they can do is they can sort of, you know, pinpoint areas and drill there and put a new nodding donkey in to get even more oil and gas out.
Yeah.
The amazing thing is, in their history, they've been going since 2002. In their history, they've dug 150 wells. They've never had a dry one.
Wow.
That's just remarkable. No one's ever done that. That's nuts.
Yeah.
You know, so it's quite an unusual. I mean, the obvious risks around the gas price and the oil price. But, you know, I mean, certainly oil seems to be reasonably buoyant. I think the gas price has been under pressure, but maybe it's stabilizing. But that's where the risk is. But like, you know, you're going to have risk with an oil stock, aren't you?
That's phenomenal. I mean, what I'm saying is the success rate there of the drills is phenomenal. Yeah. Because if you're looking at a wildcats or a drill or something, the chance of that is almost, even with lots of, you
one
know...
One in ten if you're lucky.
Yeah, one in ten, one in five, even you've got 3D data and exploration. So it's, you know, it's quite a risky business. And a lot of people don't understand that. They think they invest in an exploration company with a, you know, massive sort of a resource there, and they think that the potential is huge there. But they don't understand the chance of success is always quite low. You know, it's against the odds.
Exactly.
So, but that...
I guess the difference with DGOC is because it's already... you know, wells that are producing loads of them across this area. It's literally infill drilling, you know. So I think that's probably why they're so successful.
Yeah, okay.
And I guess they're really careful about what they actually dig.
Yeah, so what they are, 67 million market cap there. Interesting to keep a look at there. So DGOC is hard work, that is, isn't it? It doesn't... It's not natural.
Dragon gas and oil. It's really confusing me.
Yeah. Okay. Marvelous stuff. One to keep an eye on. And anything else you bought or sold recently?
Another one that I've been interested in. I haven't actually bought it myself, but I'm sort of thinking about it. And I've done a really big write-up on it on my website, and it's had a fantastic response. You know, people have been really pleased with what I've done on there. I've done a blog about it. Mm. And that's Cake, you know, CAKE, Cake, which is Patisserie Holdings.
Yeah.
They're the people who... we've got patisserie Valerie shops, you know, little coffee shops and, yep. and cakes and stuff. And I like it. The thing that's really interesting about it is Luke Johnson's involved, you know, the, mm-hmm. the sort of guy who was with Channel 4 and he was Pizza Express and stuff. Yep. I think he's also EHG, Elegant Hotels Group.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
He's got a really interesting record as an entrepreneur. And, yeah, I think, you know, they're talking about they want to double the number of outlets that Cake has. It's also got, like sandwich business and some sort of organic bakery shops, a couple of them. But I think the real growth is from, you know, Patisserie Valerie. That's the hot bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not cheap. I mean, it's on a sort of forward PE of 17. I think it's got around 2% divvy. You know, so it's not cheap, but then it's not massively expensive either. And in the current environment where everything just seems to go up, I think it could be quite a good one.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I think DGOC should take a leaf out of these books. Cake. You can't get simpler than that. Now, you remember exactly. that ticker, Cake.
Oh, brilliant ticker.
I know, but I'm just looking at their 12 months periods. And fair play, pretty much all the comparatives are all double-digit percentage increases from revenue, 13%.
I was really impressed by those last update. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
And as you say, if they're going to double the number of shops, well, straight away, you're probably going to double your profit.
Yeah.
So, I think it's your potential.
And even in a downturn, let's be honest, who doesn't like some cake?
Exactly. It's that sort of affordable treat, isn't it? It's like even people at the, you know, sadly at the poorer end of society, they do love going out for their little treats. And Pat Val's the kind of place they like to go to, you know, to treat themselves. So
I haven't got a job, I'm on the dole, but I know what I'll do. Yeah. I got a scratch card and a bit of cake.
Cheer me up, you know what I mean?
yeah, lovely, like, all right. This is two to put on your menu to look at there. So that's DGOC, yeah. Diversified Gas and Oil, and cake. You won't forget that one. Cheers, fellas.
Like I said, I've done a detailed blog on the website.
I'll put a link to your website on the blog page there. Thanks for coming on, and speak again soon, fella. Cheers.
Thanks, Jess. See you, mate.
Okay, it's time for today's suggested one for your watch list. Listen, if you know of a company that you think other people should put on their watch list, submit it. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click in one of the blog posts, says scroll down until you see the question that says, do you know of a stock that you think should be on people's watch lists? Click here, fill in the form, and I could be featuring it on a future podcast. All right, this is from Kieran. It's ITM Power. What does the company do? ITM Power are a clean energy company supplying hydrogen as a fuel to vehicles, power to gas, and also hydrogen to industrial applications. What's the company's current share price, market cap, and shares in issue? 18 pence. That's 1/8. 45 million market cap and 250 million shares in issue. What revenue, profit, loss does the company generate? Revenue and grants of 2.96 million in the 6 months ended 31st of October. Revenue on its own was £405,000. Loss before tax of £2.27 million. How much cash or debt does the company have? For the 6 months ended 31st of October, they had cash of £1.725 million. On the 26th of January, they raised a total of £5.7 million before expenses at 17 pence. The proceeds of the placing was for working capital to deliver their current pipeline and future growth. No debt. And Kieran says the company is currently in cash burn phase. It's a new player in the hydrogen market, and hydrogen fuel is a new industry. List three reasons why someone should add them to their Vox Markets watch list. Reason one. ITM are a clean energy company operating in three areas: clean fuel, power to gas, and also supplying industrial hydrogen. Reason two, ITM Power and Shell have just opened their first public H2 refueling station on the M25 at Cobham Services. There are several more to follow. Hydrogen is a good competitor to electric lithium cars. Very interesting. Also, reason three, the company has been actively working to deploy power to gas units in both Germany and the UK. Recent National Grid Ofgem RNS 30th November 2016. This allows excess green power to be converted to hydrogen and put into the national gas grid for later use. So that's ITM Power. Thanks for that, Kieran. That's the kind of stuff I like. Learning stuff like that. I've heard of ITM. I've never really done research. And this really summarizes, you know, why we should look into it further. And that's the point of this. It's not to invest. It's to do some further research. And that's got me interested. Thank you very much, Kieran, for that. And like I said, if you want to bring a stock to thousands of people, targeted people, investors, and you want to share some information, please do it via this podcast. It'll get there. It'll get to the right ears on the right heads. with the right brains. Okay, top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are, at five, Ascent Resources. It's there again, AST. At four, it's there again, 88 Energy, 88E ticker. At three, went up by over 300% yesterday on relisting, Red Leopard Holdings. Not Red Leotard Holdings, which I did think a second when I first saw it. That's RLH. That's, I don't know why I'm picturing a leopard now in a red leotard. So are you. At two, URU Metals. That's URU ticker. At one, Extract Resources, XTR. And the most liked RNSs on Vox in the last 24 hours are Vast Resources, VAST, exercise of warrants and issue of equity. At four, UK Oil and Gas, UKOG, Directorate Change and Appointment of Co-Broker. At three, SDX Energy, update on South Dzuk drilling activity. At two, Proxarma, PROX, new contract win. Of course, I covered that on the charts earlier on the earlier podcast with Nicola Duke, the Duchess of the Chart. And number one, wow. It's a popular stock at the moment. It's URU Metals. That's URU ticker. Investment in Mrs. That's Management Resource Solutions. Investment in Mrs. and Warrant Exercise. That's it for the podcast. Don't forget, I can't plug this enough. If you know of a stock that you think should be other people's watch list, submit it now. And it will get on the podcast. And as yet, there's no other in the queue at the moment. So get it on. Get it in, get it on, you know what I'm saying? That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.